covering the crew all season long on WTMJ. This is Brewers Extra Inning. Now, here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Doesn't matter how, it matters by how many. Brewers get the victory by 1-3-2 in the opener against the Minnesota Twins. Welcome in, everybody. This is Brewers Extra Innings. I'm Dom Catronio, along with Jerry Augustine here on the phone line tonight. Brewers win game one of the border battle. Pitching was solid. Offense was okay. Coleman Crowe was great. And once again, Aaron Ashby with a vulture victory, his 8th victory of the year. We'll have plenty of fun stuff about that as he breaks a record of a former teammate of yours, Augie. But the story to me today's game is the Brewers, quite simply, they did not play their best. The Brewers did not play their brand of baseball today in large part. But Jake Bauer said it great over on the television side at the end of the game, saying, I don't know where we keep finding these guys that work fast, throw strikes, and have nasty stuff, but I love it. And that's what Coleman Crowe is today. He is the story in a spot start working into the 6th inning. I know he gets a no decision in today's game, Augie, but you got to love the spunk, the confidence that he showed just in, you know, a month's time between starts in the big leagues. He came up like he didn't miss a beat.
He was excellent tonight. I tell you, when you talk about a young man coming into a game and you don't know he hasn't been there for a month, he's getting his second start, and he's getting that opportunity. But his efficiency tonight, making all his pitches, being able to command the strike zone. He threw over 5 innings. He threw 68 pitches, 49 strikes, and he used all his pitches. I'll tell you what, he was very effective. He retired, I believe, the first 11 in a row, and he just threw the ball very well. When you're looking for an outing for a young man to come up from the minor leagues and give you 5 strong innings, giving something special, I tell you, it doesn't get any better. He threw the ball very well, and he's the story of the night, really.
Yeah, he did his job. The way I see it for Coleman Crowe, you know, being this spot start, Pat Murphy said earlier today, they wanted to give everybody an extra day of rest on this time through the order. Their next off day isn't until next Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, after the Cubs series. And yeah, that is indeed the case. So they wanted to give everybody an extra day off. You get Miz against the Cubs. You'll probably get Brandon Sproat against the Cubs. And then TBD probably on Wednesday, most likely Kyle Harrison. But the point being, Coleman Crowe to come up today, do his job. I know he was only at 68 pitches, like you said, but you could see the swings were becoming more frequent, a little bit more timed up. You know, when you get that first look at the cutter and the curveball combo that Crowe has, I thought it certainly kept the Twins off balance. And this is something for all the, you know, young pitchers out there, maybe parents that have undersized, doesn't have the loud velocity pitcher. We see a lot of that down here in southeastern Wisconsin, of course. Here's Coleman Crowe, and I can promise you, Crowe isn't even that tall as what he looks on television. I don't mean this in a bad way, Augie, because I know you know what I'm talking about here. Crowe's a guy, all maybe 6 foot of him, maybe 6 feet of him. He topped out at, what, 92 miles an hour today, and he got big league hitters out. That is an amazing development success story. And it's a reminder that these guys, just the Brewers have a way to find them, and he understood what his stuff is. His strength is making his stuff move. He did not really throw any four-seamers today, relied on the cutter curve, and he had success in the big leagues.
Yeah, he sure did. You look at it, a guy comes up, especially in his second start, he comes up and he's going to figure, well, how am I going to approach this? And you're exactly right. He had to depend on his secondary stuff to really get him through things. Utilize the fastball, the good locations. I thought that's one thing he did really good tonight, Dom, was he utilized the fastball, the good locations, but it was his secondary pitches that really made him tonight, made his efficiency. And you take a guy who used the secondary pitches like he did tonight and not walk anybody. That's what's so amazing. That's great command, understanding what you have to do, being able to locate, using the full quadrant of the strike zone, and using the fastball efficiently. I thought he was very efficient with it, is what you have to do is when that's your number one pitch. But the secondary pitches really for him tonight really told the story.
I mean, you look at it now for the last week, and I talked about this in yesterday's Brewers Weekly with how great the starters have been lately for the Brewers. But now you throw Coleman Crowe into this list too. And over the last seven games to the Brewers, so they go with a 5-1 homestand and they win the opener today against the Twins. Include five more innings from Coleman today, 37 and a third innings from the starters over these last seven games. That's averaging, you know, a little over five per. A 1.93 ERA, just 10 walks and 48 strikeouts in that time. I mean, my goodness, what a stretch right now for Brewers pitching to continue this great, great role that they're on to try to keep this bullpen fresh.
Yeah, they're just a command of the pitching. The starting staff is, I think that's what you'd probably agree with me with this young staff that's really out there that hasn't had a lot of time in the bigs, being able to go out and command the strike zone and be efficient as they are. There's not 10 walks in 37 innings is not a lot of walks. That means they're staying in the strike zone. They're being competitive. They're getting ahead in the zone. They're being able to pitch with their primary pitch, but use the secondary pitches effectively. And, you know, look at tonight. I think how many games have we looked at over these last seven or eight games, and you'll see a starter going out there for five or six innings, whatever it is, and have one walk or no walks, be efficient. Yeah, there's going to be pitch times when they're going to go deeper in the counts, but the efficiency in which they use those pitches, those secondary pitches, to get to where they need to be is so important, and I think that's what's so impressive. Being able to throw the ball in when you want, out when you want, and be able to locate it where you want and stay in the strike zone and stay ahead of hitters, I think that's what's been so impressive about this very young starting staff that they have.
You know, I was texting an evaluator and just trying to break down a depth chart of what the Brewers pitching staff looks like right now. It's just in a sort of loose particular order here, but, you know, Miz is a bona fide one. Harrison is a two, could be a one one day. I think Drouin's a stud. Henderson, who gets the ball tomorrow, stud. Brandon Sproat continues to show signs of brilliant. That's five. You got Coleman Crow, six. You got Robert Gasser down there, seven. Haven't even mentioned Chad Patrick, who's in the bullpen right now, eight. Haven't even mentioned Quinn Priester and Brandon Woodruff on the injured list right now. So, I mean, that's 10 big league starters the Brewers have available to them at any given moment. And Coleman Crow is on that list with two great starts. The Brewers have won both games that he's pitched in. And it's just an embarrassing amount of riches from the Brewers pitching lab and what they've been able to do to continue to develop this club the way they do with pitching and defense and run prevention.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, and you got to give so much credit to Chris Hook and Jim Henderson on how they go about it. You know, there's a culture that they have built here, Dom, and I think you'll agree with me, over the last 4 or 5 years where they've caught up and they understand the pitchers. But it goes more than understanding what they do with what their best pitch is and how they approach the game and how they want to throw the game. It's more of that personality, learning about them and learning about their personalities, what they feel they need to do as pitchers to be successful and allow them to be successful that way. I think that's what's so important. I think Chris Hook does an excellent job at that. I've known him for a long time, and he's the kind of guy that really wants to get to know their personalities. And when you know these personalities, you understand them, you understand how they approach and what they like to do to be successful. You can take that. Now you can take it into the part where you take the mental part and the physical part. You put that together, and all of a sudden, you got great sequences, you got great outings, you got great confidence. And I'll tell you what, it's really shown in this pitching staff. They've built a great culture. And I'll tell you what, probably in any organization in baseball, probably the Brewers are one organization that every organization looks at and says their pitching has been the story of what this organization has been doing to be successful. And it's because of what Chris Hook and Jim Henderson have been able to do with these very young pitchers.
It's really amazing the amount of rookie arms they've used to this point in the season. Yes, they only scored three runs, and we'll talk about that crazy play that allowed them to score the go-ahead run in this one, or the tying run, I should say, with the obstruction. We'll redefine all that. 855-616-1620 is the phone number. 855-616-1620. John, I see you on the line. We'll get to you on the other side of the break right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. Brewers get the victory 3-2 over the Twins. What is that, six out of their last seven now? They're on a roll. things are doing well. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. Let's do a little hot or cold during this segment. It's brought to you by Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. With summer heat coming fast, don't get caught without a working AC when you need it most. Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical is offering $25 off AC tune-ups, but only through the end of May. Appointments are filling quickly, so act now. I mean, it's going to be the 80s and tomorrow down here. That'll be great. Schedule your tune-up today at Sider, SEIDER.com. With Jerry Augustine, I'm Dom Catronio. A couple of texts that have come here. This one from Jerry in the Dells. They're rolling just like last year, the year before that. Same old, isn't it great? This one from Joseph. At the game tonight, everyone was baffled by the obstruction call. I wish they were people better at letting people know, the umpires, that is, within the ballpark. Good to get the call, though, on the Brewers' side. So we'll break that down here in just a moment, talk about who's hot and cold. But let's get to the phone lines here. John from Eau Claire. John calling in live here on Brewers Extra Innings.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. Love the show. I just want to get your take. I think it was super cool to see Trevor McGill finally get back in the closing role. You know, seeing him struggle early on, but, you know, working with the team and working with the guys behind the scenes, and then finally getting a save and securing the win for us. Super cool for him. I'm sure he's excited. I'm excited. So hopefully that continues. Just, yeah, super cool to see.
I agree. That's a great call there, John. Appreciate it. He can certainly be a candidate for who's hot, right, Augie? Because, yes, he had that bad blip, you know, in the middle of April where he had the poor PFP day against the Nats. Then he gave up three a couple of nights later against the Blue Jays and was effectively removed from the closer role from that day forward. But starting on April 16th, when he got moved off of it, tried to get him back in the right track, and including tonight, let me read you his numbers here real quick because he's been very quietly moving in the right direction. 11 innings, he's got only allowed six hits in that time, just two earned runs. Here's the best part, only two walks and 15 strikeouts over that time, and tonight he touched 99.9, so the velo's starting to come back for McGill.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, when you eventually look at it, the guy who's got that mentality to be the closer is Trevor McGill, and it's just about getting him back on track. You know, he's still battling a little bit. You can tell he's not as sharp as maybe once he spiked that one ball, like 54-foot breaking ball today. He overthrew it a little bit. Those things are going to happen, but I think when you look at what's going on, and it's not only going on with Trevor McGill, but I think it's going on with Uribe a little bit right now. He looked like he was overthrowing a little bit tonight. The confidence that those guys have in William Contreras behind the plate and being able to call sequences of pitches, I think is so important. I think the confidence comes where Trevor McGill got away from it a little bit, all of a sudden came back, and now he's been throwing the ball. He's got that confidence again. He threw a couple bad breaking balls, but what did he strike guys out with? What did he make great pitches with tonight? He made some really good pitches with that breaking ball, and I think what these guys are starting to see is, you know what, I'm going to go back there and I'm going to concentrate and be able to make the best pitch I can, but I'm having so much confidence in the way William Contreras is calling the game and the way he has confidence of saying, hey, you throw a bad one, I'm going to come back and get that, but I might change the pitch before that. I might go to fastball, I might come back with the breaking ball right away, but I think that has a lot to do with it. That confidence between the catchers and that pitchers is so important, and I think that William Contreras has got their confidence now, and you're seeing both these guys starting to throw the ball a little bit better.
And then you look at it under the hood for McGill right now. Some of the numbers that we talked about early in the season have started to trend back in the right direction. It's funny, you can bring us into this, Augie, of, you know, the first month of the season, guys aren't quite built up, and describing the soreness that you have to battle through for the first month of the season, where you are adding strength, even though maybe the radar gun doesn't always show it. And it feels like Trevor McGill is starting to get to the other side of that. Okay, the soreness is now becoming added mass or becoming more fluidity and actually giving him the chance to rip the fastball like he's used to and snap a curveball like he's used to, because the numbers under the hood are looking a lot better than what they were supposed to from a season ago.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you look at what he does, You can tell his fluidness in his delivery, especially with the fastball. He has that good breaking ball, and he needs the breaking ball to throw it over for a plate, but I really see it in his fastball. His fastball has that electricity when he throws it in on a right-hander. It has that explosiveness, or away to a lefty. It has that great explosiveness. He even comes back on the inside part. Every once in a while, he'll go in on a lefty or away for a right-hander. It's got that explosiveness. When you see that explosiveness in his release point, nice and relaxed, nice and fluid, that breaking ball all of a sudden starts finding it. And I think you're right. You go through early in the season, you feel comfortable, and your things are going your way. Hitters are not quite adjusted to you. You're not quite adjusted to coming in on more than one occasion in a row. You got to get to a place where you get that consistent feeling that you have confidence that each and every day you can go out there. I think Trevor Megill is starting to find that. And I think each day he goes out there, now back in that closer role, you're going to see him get better and better.
I still think they are going to flip-flop, though, between Uribe and Megill, depending on where they are in the lineup. And today they had Uribe face the top of the order with all those righties. It's good to see that you have multiple options back there right now for the Brewers. Before we take another break, I said we're going to talk about obstruction, and we didn't, but we'll do that for the next segment. Let's get to Jerry in West Allis. Jerry, you're live here on Brewers Extra Innings.
Well, hi. Thank you for listening to me. I have a comment, overview comment, as far as the division, and everybody's all teams are over 500. This could be one of the things in baseball history, I believe. And everybody's above 500. And of course, somebody's going to pull out. That's my comment.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jerry. I think you know what it reminds me of, Augie? It reminds me a lot of 2018, of course. Now, granted, there was one bad team in the division that year, being Cincinnati. But yet, Cincinnati only had 67 wins that season. But yet, the other four teams were all above 500. They were all fighting to make the postseason. Obviously, we know what happened with game number 163. Or then even a few years prior, the following year even, with the division, three teams above 500. And what was the year when Pittsburgh made it and everyone was coming down to the wire? I mean, it's sneaky been the best division in baseball the last 2 years. I remember last year they had three teams in the postseason. But yet, you're right. I think that the way that things are looking right now, the Pirates lost a tough one tonight. The Cubs are going to win the Crosstown Classic, game one of that series. Entertaining one right now in St. Louis with the Royals. The Reds won their first game of their Ohio Cup today, 7-6 in the Tito Bowl. But the point being is none of these teams are going away. And the better the division is, the better battle-tested whoever this division winner is going to be.
Oh, there's no question. This division is really coming to its own. But the one thing I really like about this division, Dom, each team has a strength that they look at. You know, you're looking you look at Cincinnati, probably one of those, like the Brewers, are more of a well-rounded team. They can play a good, strong defense. Their pitching or their bullpen is a pretty good bullpen. And they play in a ballpark that you could score some runs. But then you take a look at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's pitching staff has been as good as anybody's. St. Louis is all of a sudden just playing good, strong baseball. The Cubs, we all know about their starting staff, the way they've been throwing the ball, and their offense is pretty good, and the Brewers being well-rounded. This is a division that they're taking their strengths, and they're all playing very, very well to their strengths, and that's why you're seeing everybody over 500. They're going out and doing the things they have to do to win ball games with the type of team they are, and I think that's fun to see, and I think that's one thing that's going to become of it. You're going to see a nice little race. You're going to see when you play inside the division, you better be ready to play because each team has their unique little style, and it's going to make the games a lot of fun to watch.
Indeed. Let's take another breather. Let's actually talk about the obstruction in the next and a little bit of offense coming up in the next segment, too. Doug, I see you on the line. I'll get to you on the other side of the break as well. 855-616-1620 on a Friday night border battle win with the Brewers 3-2 over the Twins. Back in a moment on 620 WTMJ. Winner, winner, fish fry dinner. Brewers over the Twins 3-2 with Jerry Augustine. I'm Dom Catronio. We'll workshop that. That's been sticking a little bit lately on Fridays. I think I might be using that a little bit more often here. I'm surprised it took me that long to come up with a bit like that. Anyway, Brewers get the victory 3-2. Doug, I'll get to you in a moment. But first, I just want to explain what happened in the obstruction call in that eighth inning for the Brewers to tie and then ultimately take the lead against the Twins. And I meant to grab my rule book. It's just over here on the shelf. But the point being, remember, this was a couple seasons ago. Major League Baseball said they're going to make an emphasis on calling obstruction when defenders are blocking a base without the baseball. Now, to backtrack, the Buster Posey rule at home plate, meaning catchers can no longer block the plate without the ball, and also in doing so, runners can't barrel over a catcher when they're trying to get to the plate. The Buster Posey rule, when he destroyed his leg and that sort of thing. Finally, we got legislation a year ago to say, hey, let's start, you know, blocking or making sure that guys are getting called for that when they're blocking, putting their knee down at second on stolen bases, and when you'd see it most often. What it seemed, though, Augie, it seemed like every time there was an obstruction call, it would go against the Brewers. Either it wasn't called, or there was a phantom one last year in Tampa Bay that I'm still mad about, and I'm sure you could talk to Caleb Durbin about it as well. But tonight, with the infield in, runners on the corners, Churio on third, hot shot to short. Churio was not running on the pitch. He took two steps as a secondary lead, realized he had to get back to third. The throw went to third base. Third baseman Royce Lewis, his foot was blocking the entry for Jackson Churio to get back to the bag. Churio slides feet first straight into his cleat. The tag is out, but then initially called and overturned, saying, no, he did not have a path back to that bag because it was being blocked before Royce Lewis had the ball. It is obstruction. And what I think was controversial, I think it's the right call. That's why I wanted to check the rule book real quick, is that technically Churio was just going back to his base, but they gave him the 90 to score the tying run. We're not going to complain about it from this side of the fence, but kudos to the umpires for finally getting that right and finally getting it in the Brewers' favor. It was Jordan Baker with the call, the crew chief over at third.
You know, that's one of the toughest calls, Dom, in baseball. You know, when you look at the third baseman going in, Lewis going in the third base, did he intentionally put his foot there, or what did just putting his foot down there go there? I think there's two. I think home plate is one that you cannot block the plate. I think that's a great rule, the collision rule. I think that's a great rule. The other one that can either happen either at second base or maybe possibly even first base, or the one that like it happened today, I think those plays are tougher plays because they could be where the guy coming into the base, even though his foot was in the way of him not having a clear path, he could definitely have been out, not been tagged way before he would have gotten there. I think that's a tough play, and I think that's something that baseball may have to look at because it's a tough play because sometimes he's just clearly out and he should be out, but the obstruction on that it's got to be. I think that should be a play that's reviewable. I don't know what baseball is going to do about it. I think they should look at it, but it's a tough play. And like tonight, if you looked at it pretty closely, I think the tag was down before Churio even got his foot near there. What would you look at that? Would he have been out if the foot wasn't there? Yes, probably, maybe. But you have to take a look at that. I don't know how you feel, Dom. I just think this is that's one of the toughest calls and toughest rules in baseball right now.
Yeah, it's impossible. You know, I was talking to the umpires last year. I actually went down and spoke to Alan Porter, who's one of the best umpires in the game, and Jim Wolf, and just trying to pick their brain about it and trying to understand what makes that play so hard to call. And they just simply said, I can't have my eyes looking at four things at once. I got to look at the tag. I got to look at if the runner's getting in time. I got to look if there's obstruction. I got to look if there's the ball's coming in time. Like, that play needs to be reviewable, and the last thing we want is another reviewable play right now. So kudos to them for getting it right. Let me just read the language of the rule here real quick. 6.01H, if we're getting specific here. If a play is being made on an obstructed runner or if the batter runner is obstructed before he touches the base, the ball is dead, and all runners shall advance without liability to be put out to the bases they would have reached in the umpire's judgment if there had been no obstruction. So there we go. That's why you always have a rule book, kids. Always have it nearby. Bill Schroeder taught me that. Make sure you always know the rules.
Good job, Dom. Good job.
Appreciate that. Let's get back to the phone lines, though. Then we'll get back to the game itself. Let's get to Doug and Baraboo. Doug, you're live here on Brewers Extra Innings.
Good evening, guys. Augie said a word that caught my attention when he was talking about McGill, and the word was mentality. as a closer. And over the years, we've seen some really good closers, physical skills. Some had a lot of physical skills, some not so much. But the real closers have that mentality. And as a fan, I don't know how they get it, but it's just a gut feeling from a fan how you feel it. And I wonder if Augie could say a few more words about what he meant about McGill with the mentality.
Take it, Augie.
Well, I think one thing you look at the mentality on that is you talk about a guy who goes out there and understands that, you know what, the hardest three outs in the game of baseball are the last three outs. Because, number one, the guys have had more at-bats. You get pinch hitters who are really understand when they're going to pinch it. They know what the fielder is, the pitcher is. They know what the pitcher is going to throw. That mentality is the ability for a pitcher to go out there and say, I don't worry about all those things. I go out there to do one thing, throw strikes and be able to command my pitches, do my sequences, be confident in what I do. And that mentality that you take out there allows you to go out and execute those pitches. And I think when you get Trevor McGill in one of those grooves, and I know Dom would agree with me, that he gets in that groove, he just looks like he's unhittable because his ball's exploding, his fastball's exploding. When he goes in on right-handers, away from left-handers, he's got that breaking ball that he's consistently throwing for strikes. Those are so important. That mentality of having that confidence that you can go out there and throw any pitch at any time in any sequence when you have to is what makes a guy that closer. They're the hardest three outs in the game of baseball. It's just the way the game is. But a guy like Trevor McGill has that ability to say, you know what, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to compete and I'm going to do the best I can and good things are going to happen. And when he's right, he's very, very good.
Yeah, I agree entirely with all that, Augie. Appreciate the call there, Doug. Offensively tonight for the Brewers to shift gears, it wasn't the prettiest night. They went 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position. They only had 2 extra base hits of the 9 hits they collected on the evening. They left 7 runners on base. They had a guy thrown out on the bases and nearly had another guy thrown out on the bases if it wasn't for that miracle obstruction call. But they got just enough done, and Jake Bowers has the quietest 17-game on-base streak going right now and the quietest 800-plus OPS to this point in the season. Where the heck would the Brewers be without Jake Bowers at this point in the year?
Oh, he's just been fantastic. You know, it's so interesting to see him, the way he took when he came back. Was it at the end of the year last year, Dom, when he came back? And he was just fantastic. And when asked about what do you do, he says, I don't worry about what I did yesterday or what I'm going to do tomorrow. I just try to concentrate on what I'm going to do on that at-bat in that day, what I can do to help the team. And I think that that's really made a change in him, that he's turned out to be such a valuable part, swinging the bat this year so good. He has such a great approach. He understands what he wants to do, and he approaches it that way. He goes up there looking for what his job is to do at that at-bat. If you talk about a young man who's really engaged himself in understanding the game of baseball on not only the physical side, which he can swing the bat very well, but on the mental side of it, how you approach the game and how you approach your at-bats in each day. I tell you what, Jake Bowers has been just been fantastic the last half of last year and the first half of this year.
I think that the Brewers, especially with Yelich, with he's going through the back right now, but then still missing a month that he had to deal with, they need lefty pop. And I know they're still in this weird homer funk where they're not necessarily hitting the ball over the fence. But for Bowers to crush that RBI double, he continues to hit the ball hard. I mean, Terang being your best offensive player is great and all, but the sooner Churio gets back on track, he had 2 hits tonight, which was great to see. William hasn't hit a homer in 3 weeks, trying to get him back on track too. But this lineup needs the balance that both Bowers, Vaughn, Yelich even provide, where you have lefty-righty-lefty that all can leave the yard at any given moment, and whether it be a double or whether it be a homer like we saw the other night, where Bowers has found himself in this tweener role where every other team says, he's not going to be our starter. He's not going to be our everyday guy. And even last year, he's injured, and they go and sign Andrew Vaughn. Vaughn tears cover off the ball, and like you said, the end of the year, he was great, and he was fighting his way into the postseason lineup. This is another opportunity, you know, granted by the Brewers organization to give somebody like Jake Bowers, who's a soon-to-be 31-year-old corner infielder. Those guys don't last very long in the big leagues in multiple teams in the way that, a reminder, Jake Bowers was non-tendered 2 years ago and was on a minor league deal last year. Now he's hitting fourth on a team that's expecting to be in the postseason this year. It's an amazing development, and he deserves all the kudos in the world for keeping himself relevant in Major League Baseball.
I agree with you 100%. Here's a young man that you look at the corners, he's not going to be here long. And how are you going to do it? How are you going to make yourself a part of a team? What are you going to do that you can help this ball club be a better ball club? He can play the outfield. He can go out and play the outfield. He plays a great first base. He's a great defensive guy. But I think even more important, Dom, and I agree with you, his at-bats that he has each and every day, that person to fill that gap on the left-hand side beside Terang, I tell you right now, is so important. Yes, you do have Mitchell and you do have Frelick and Renifo when he can switch hit. But I'm going to tell you what, you look at this club this year and you see all the important games that have been played with key hits in certain spots. I'll tell you, a lot of times Bauer's name comes up and he's just done that. He's become very valuable, and I agree with you 100%. That value becomes from the hitting side of it. He's good on the defense, but at the hitting side of it is so important.
So we have a new development here. We've brought back our Player of the Game feature. It's brought to you by International Autos Group. Just like the game's MVP, you can drive it a summer in style and save up to $15,000 on select in-stock models. You can go to iamilwaukee.com. International Autos, where ordinary needs to be extraordinary. Personally, my vote for the go-ahead double is Jake Bowers for my Player of the Game. You can choose somebody different. You can choose the same. Who do you got for a Player of the Game tonight, Augie?
Well, I've got to go with Kroll. I when the guy comes up, you know, you're looking for a guy to come up and just give you a good outing, keep you in the ball game, and starting off getting the first 11 guys and pitching the way he did into the through the fifth inning, being efficient as he was. Jake Bauer's hit was the big hit of the ball game and probably the MVP, but I'll tell you, not far behind. Crow just did an awesome job. You know, and I just want to throw a little kudos for Aaron Aspie. He's 8-0 now, and we're just 43 games into the season. That's pretty special also.
Well, the record I was going to mention that he broke is, so it's the fewest games to reach 8 wins in a season for a Brewer pitcher since 1976 Jim Slayton. If you remember the beginning of that season for Jim Slayton, he had 8 wins in 50 games. And just to give the difference of the way the game is played these days, in those games, in a handful of those games, I counted 4 starts that Slayton had at least 9 innings, meaning there were a couple games in here that he pitched into extras too, where it's just a different game nowadays, Augie. And here's Ashby technically giving up the lead and still getting the win. I hope we blow up the win personally.
I think we just found out a little bit today that he is human, that every once in a while there's going to be a little nook and cranny that we have to shape up for him. But, you know, he's just – he right now, when you look at without having Jared Koenig out there right now, I think his value has been so much to this ball club. And D.L. Hall and Drobak is coming – are all throwing the ball well. But Aaron Ashby is really the guy, the center, that bullpen right now that's been the – been holding down the fort and keeping things under control while Uribe and McGill get in their spots. And you get Jerry Koenig back, everything's going to get a lot better. But he's been very, very good. And Ashby's pretty special with 8 wins so far. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, 1976, he went 14-15, a 3.44 ERA. He started 38 games, finished 12 of them, 292 2/3 innings. They don't make them like they used to, Augie, right?
That's a lot of innings. We used to complete a lot of games. We didn't come out a lot of games back then. I was wondering, I think any time if you didn't go 7 innings, you felt like you didn't do your job. But the game has changed now. And back then, it was a lot of fun to pitch and have complete games. One of the best things to do is complete a game and win a game. It makes you feel real good. And back then, it was a lot of fun.
All right, well, you better rest up. We got a lot of games on the docket here coming up. Augie, appreciate you as always, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
A great way to start a road trip and go to, you know, this border battle last year. After last year, we went in there, we played so well against them. Because interesting, too, it was going to start a 3-2 ball game. typical border battle game. Tomorrow will be another fun one to watch. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Jerry Augustine, former Brewers pitcher and teammates with 1976 Jim Slayton as well. Let's do a little buy or sell coming up next. Talk a little bit more about this offense and about the team at large, as what are the questions that are going to be answered over this next week with some really important opponents. We'll talk about that after this on 620 WTMJ. A few more texts that have rolled in here. Answer some of the questions. Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. We're going to the bottom of the hour here as the Brewers win 3-2 over the Twins. Text from Reggie in Milwaukee. What sets the Brewers pitching lab apart? How are they so good at identifying talent? Well, they're not the only ones that do it. And I think that what makes the Brewers so special is their embrace of both, meaning there's a lot under the hood that you don't see in the pitching lab. Like I explained with Jacob Mizorowski last week, saying sometimes people wrongly assume the pitching lab is just set your finger here, put your thumb here, you're going to throw this pitch nasty. There's the science behind it. If there's a great article on MLB.com, Adam McAlvey wrote it, about Jacob Mizorowski, and great comments from Chris Hook. I was actually there with him having this conversation where about the engine. We talked about this a little bit in Brewers Weekly last night. The engine that is Jacob Mizorowski. How do you tune up that engine? When do you need to change the air filter? When do you need to make sure you get an oil change? How's the transmission fluid? All that sort of things. That's what the pitching lab is for. Can we get more mass in your lower body? Can we make sure there's less strain on your elbow? Is your posture proper? What are we measuring? I mean, it goes beyond you can possibly imagine. On top of the scouting and on top of the qualitative stuff, right? I mean, what was the last time you heard about a Brewer not really fitting in the clubhouse, right? I think the Brewers really do care about that. They match up their actions with their words. And you look at their head man in Matt Arnold, he's always said it's about people. He's got a scouting background. He still cares about the scouting side of the game and what they've been able to do identifying pitchers that they want. Like Coleman Crow, who they traded for. That was the first trade that Matt Arnold and David Stearns made as opponents when David went to the Mets a couple of years ago, and now it's bearing fruit finally. Or you look at the acquisition of Kyle Harrison on his third team in less than a year. That's working out pretty darn well. Shane Drouin is on the big league team right now, so they know what they're doing in that regard. This one from Chef Ed. I know it's only May, but these six games next week will have a huge bearing on the overall season, meaning once you get through the Twins, not to look ahead of ourselves here, but you get the Cubs down at Wrigley, an off day, and then the Dodgers come to town. Now, the Dodgers are in this weird situation right now where Blake Snell's back on the injured list, Tyler Glasnow's on the injured list. It kind of feels like deja vu where the Brewers are catching the Dodgers at a time where they don't care about their starting pitchers in May. They only care about their starting pitchers in October, as Brewers fans found out last year. But even this whole stretch right now, as you know, you should be taking care of business against the Twins. Just win the series and you'll be just fine. And then you go to a place that's been really a bounce house for the Cubs. The Cubs have won 15 in a row at Wrigley. It will be a rocking environment down there. The Brewers didn't win their last three games down there last season, going back to the regular season and, of course, the NLDS. And then you get the Dodgers. So on top of that, right after that, you get the Cardinals, who have continued to play well to this point in the season. So a really big, another, you know, measuring stick type week coming up on that homestand and going down to Chicago. We'll really find out what the Brewers are about. Will they have Christian Yelich available? Remains to be seen. So like the buy or sell, you know, the Brewers are now 8 games above 500. That's a new high watermark on the season. And I want to remind you, as bad as things got earlier in April with that 6-game losing streak, they never dipped below 500. They got to 500, but they never dipped below 500. And now they're 8 games above the mark and continue to roll. They're 25-17, one of the best teams in baseball. We don't care about the standings at this point in the season, but I keep buying the fact that this team still has reasons to believe they are going to get better when Koenig returns. When even a role like Rob Zastrzyzny returns will certainly help this ball club. Or even somebody, like we said, with Christian Yelich having his back issues right now, but you look at the talent on the farm. Cooper Pratt hit another home run tonight. That's his third in his last 3 weeks. He's also got double sprinkled in there. He has more walks and strikeouts over that stretch. He continues to develop. Jet Williams has been playing well down there. Luis Lara, what more is there to say about him? The Brewers have reinforcements on the way, both at the big league level and, if necessary, down in AAA right now. So I'm buying all the stock I can get right now in the Brewers, and I'm doubling down on my take leaving spring training. This team leaving Arizona is more talented than last year's team. I truly believe that. You've got an MVP candidate at the top of your order with Terang. Churio can become that. He's been hit or miss. He still went 2-for-5 today. Nothing to complain about, but 3 strikeouts. That's what you can complain about. William will get the power stroke going again, and then when Yelich returns to this order, it looks pretty darn good. It looks really, really darn good. You heard plenty from me. Let's hear from the manager. Pat Murphy coming up in just a moment. Buy or Sell is brought to you by your friends at Tony Wendorf & Associates. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, trust Tony Wendorf & Associates, one of the top real estate teams here in Wisconsin and powered by Keller Williams. They bring faith, family, and a red carpet experience to every home deal. So step up to the plate with a winning team behind you, WendorfTeam.kw.com. Brewers win 3-2. The manager coming up next, Pat Murphy, here on 620 WTMJ. Brewers win 3-2. I've been talking plenty. We'll have highlights in a little bit as well. I can't believe that Aaron Ashby's 8-0. He's 8-0. What a silly thing. What a silly thing. Anyway, here's the manager, Pat Murphy, after today's
game. At some point, I think it's a crappy way to lose a run if I'm on the other side. So I know what Shelton's feeling. I had that feeling last year or the year before, whatever it was. But I just think we need more clarity. And there's no reason. I mean, I always brag about how great MLB is about the rules. I mean, they do a great job of adjustments in the game and all the things they brought to the game. This particular rule needs to be reviewable because it is whether it should be, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, if the guy has a chance to be safe and he was kept from getting to the base, then it's... And there might be an inadvertent, but if he was kept from getting the base and otherwise would have been safe, why not review it? You know? Or maybe they just did. Maybe they did their best to do that together, you know?
And how do you think this one would have turned out?
I didn't see it. I have no idea. No idea.
You're out there pretty quick, though. You jumped out of the dugout pretty quick.
Yeah. I had a flashback of Tampa.
How many times have you read that rule?
How many times have I read it? I've had it read to me because I don't read well. That was sarcastic. I probably don't compared to the average dude, but I've had it read to me.
Mark, what about the way Coleman Crow pitched in? He called it a spot start tonight.
Wow. He's 2-for-2 for me, man. It reminds me of Henderson last year. You know, the guy just kept coming up and kept giving us great outings. It's really fun knowing his injury history and whatever. He, you know, pitched really well.
JB said it's fun to play behind him just because of his tempo and he's in control. And like, how much does that matter?
It does matter. For a young guy? It does matter, especially in today's game. You know, guys go out there and throw 83 pitches and 4 innings, and you know, you're like, God, every guy's 3-2, whatever, and this kid goes out there and just attacks. It was great. God, he's a likable kid too. Really is.
You called it a spot start before the game, that's what you said.
Yeah.
Obviously with your pitching situation, that's, you probably can't change your plans, but does it make you think?
Well, it makes you know you have a reliable guy when needed, and history tells us he's going to be needed.
It seemed like you guys had a plan to be aggressive with Joe Ryan early, go get him, and not, was that about not letting him work ahead or having a feeling what he'd throw early in counts?
Yeah. I mean, that guy's good. You know what I mean? And he exploits weaknesses really easily. I don't think he gets enough credit for how good he is. And he's always been good against us, and I know we have a different team every year, a little bit different team every year. He'll say different. But anyway, he was really, really good, but that was not the plan to just go after him, no. But we were a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
again, I mean, we didn't do damage against him, you know. And it's like, you know, we had opportunities to score many more runs.
I agree with that statement. They certainly had their chances, like second and third and nobody out in the eighth inning, and failed to get any more. But let's relive it. Highlights coming up next on 620 WTMJ. 3-2 victory. It was tight. It was nervous. It was really good from Coleman Crow. Let's relive it with the highlights.
Ready for this?
Out of here!
This?
Brought it back! Ho, ho, ho!
And this?
It is gone!
Time for tonight's highlights.
Coleman Crow getting the spot start for his second time in the big leagues, going up against a bona fide vet, Joe Ryan, who will certainly be a subject of trade rumors this July. The Brewers started out hot against him, and it would really be the only run they get. A leadoff double on the first pitch of the game by Jackson Churio, and Contreras will drive
him in. 1-2 to Contreras, and a ground ball through the left side. It'll trickle off the glove of Lee into left field. Churio charges down the line from third to score, and the Brewers take a 1-0 lead on an RBI single from Contreras.
Keep things rolling on the pitching side for Coleman Crow, getting off to a great head start.
So far, swing and a miss. He strikes him out. Two ortho ASAP strikeouts for Crow, and he's retired all six he's faced so far in this Twins lineup.
In fact, he would retire the first 11 he faced in this game before a throwing error by Renhifo was the first base runner. He wouldn't allow a hit until the fifth inning, but it was still just 1-0 Brewers through five innings. Then in the sixth, Crow ran into some danger, gave up back-to-back singles to start off the frame. They go to Aaron Ashby with men on the corners. He induced a double play, but it allowed the tying run to score, making it 1-1. Ashby returned for the seventh and allowed an RBI single to Royce Lewis. And that would be the only damage, despite four straight hits from the Twins. Only one run scored in the frame. 2-1, Minnesota with the lead. And we move on to the top of the eighth inning. It started with an infield single from Jackson Churio. He gets the second on a single by, or I should say the third on a single by Bryce Terang. Then on the corners, William Contreras at the plate in a wacky base running moment that finally went the Brewers' way.
Here's a ground ball left side. Backhanded by the shortstop. Lee throws behind the runner Churio at third, and he's tagged out. But now Jordan Baker is calling the umpires in, and they're going to talk this over. And they're going to award him home plate. The Brewers are going to tie this game up. And they're going to call obstruction on the third baseman, Royce Lewis. He had his foot in front of the third base bag, and they're going to call obstruction.
You cannot block the bag without the baseball. That's what the umpire said Royce Lewis did. Ties the game at two, then the Brewers made it hurt with Jake Bowers up next.
Two balls and one strike here on Bowers, the pitch. And Bowers rips one into right center field. This one is back and over the head of Martin, and one hops the wall. Turing around third, he's going to score. Stopping at third is Contreras. An RBI double for Jake Bowers. And the Brewers take a 3-2 lead here in the eighth inning.
Unfortunately, second and third and nobody out. The Brewers would fail to add on from there, so the bullpen had to have stressful times. In the eighth inning, it was Abner Uribe facing the top of the
first
order.
First offering to Bell. Here's a ground ball to second base. Couple of hops to Terang. Pivots, throws to second for one. Hamilton's relay to first in time. 4-6-3 it goes. The Brewers turn two, and they're out of the inning. Just what the doctor ordered for Abner Uribe.
He needed it, did all the emotes, all the celebrations. That's a conversation for another time. Then, Trevor McGill going for the save against his former club, his first save opportunity in over a month.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss! He struck him out! Got it with the curveball! And the Brewers take game one of the Twin Cities. They have won seven of their last eight. 3-2, your final. And the Brewers can go for a series victory tomorrow night here at Target Field.
Sorry, Josh Maurer. It was the Lane Grindle show here tonight. Brewers get the victory by, again, a final of 3-2. Three runs on nine hits, one error for the Brewers. They left seven. Two runs on eight hits, one error for the Twins. They left four. The winner, once again, is Aaron Ashby with a blown save. The loser goes to Morris for the Twins. Morris, his second loss of the season, and his second blown save to Trevor McGill, number five. wrap up the program after this, give you the preview of what's to come this weekend here on 620 WTMJ. Final couple minutes of the show here. Tomorrow, same time, 6:10 first pitch. We've got pregame starting at 5 with yours truly for Brewers warm-up. Take it to the on-deck show starting at 5:35 for a 6:10 first pitch. Logan Henderson getting the ball for the crew. His third start of the year. I should say fourth start, I beg your pardon. Against Connor Prelip, who is one of their top prospects, only making his fifth start of his young big league career. 21 Ks in 19 innings, but he's also allowed 3 homers in that stretch. But opponents only hitting 176 off of him. He's been very talented southpaw for the Twinkies. Then on Sunday, day game, rain in the forecast. We'll keep an eye on that for some rain delay theater. Bailey Ober has been a bright spot for the Twins a few moments this year. Their starting pitching has been phenomenal. It's the bullpen that's the issue for Minnesota. TBD, the undefeated TBD, gets the start for the Brewers on Sunday. They've already said they want to give Brandon Sproat an extra day of rest, which likely lines up Monday, Brandon Sproat in Wrigley, Tuesday, Jacob Mazurowski in Wrigley, and then Wednesday, Kyle Harrison and Wrigley. So that's what it looks like, just projecting out to what the rotation could look like for that Cubs series, and then an off day on Thursday. Otherwise, the Brewers get ready to see what's going on with Christian Yelich, because now it's been 3 straight days with him out of the lineup after returning on Tuesday, and on Wednesday. But for Yelly, if this back needs an IL stint, tomorrow would be the day to do it, because you can backdate it by 3 days. He'd only have to miss, 7 more days. He only misses 7 days in essence because of the backdated IL placement. You hope it's not the case, obviously, with his back issues coming back right after from his groin strain. But this lineup is better with Yelly in it, and the sooner they get him back, the better. Man, we're at the end of the show here, and I'm fighting through it, but plenty more coverage to come tomorrow. Again, we got both pregame and postgame tomorrow. Thank you to everybody who's tuned in live here on the radio, over on YouTube, and you can always catch these in podcast form. Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts. Even if you're not listening live throughout the weekend, you can catch up on them throughout the week. They're commercial free, by the way, so you can zip right through them really easy. If you're somebody like me too that listens to podcasts on 1.5 speed, that shouldn't be a surprise given how fast I'm talking to try to get us here to the bottom of the hour. But that is going to do it for our program here this evening. Brewers try to win the series tomorrow with the Texan Logan Henderson on the mound. Our producer has been Matt Yazel. He's on his way to the ballpark. I'm Dom Catronio. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Until then, keep on swinging.